This episode brought to you by, I'm going to give you a clue, Scott. Shake 33 times. What does that make you think about?
It makes me think about being out in the cold, freezing my butt off.
What? No. You know what it makes me think about? A nutritional product that helps me get from point A to point B. And man, does that stuff taste good. We bring Warren Pohl, who is on the 33 Shake Tour. Warren, where are you exactly located at this time, and what's in front of you?
Well, what's in front of me is my laptop, which should show a picture of you, but sort of nearly does, because I think we have a connection issue. But I am in Chubbuck, just outside of Pocatello in Idaho, in the home of John Bryant, one of your excellent listeners who foolishly reached out to us on Twitter after we said we were on tour and possibly hadn't realized that we are the kind of people who take up those invitations.
So what are you on tour doing? Give us a little update on that. And then also let us know if you're open to crash on other people's couches along the way on this tour.
Well, so what we're doing is we figured, we had a look, 33 Shake, our energy gels are now on sale in the US. We still hand make them in the UK, ship them in bulk to our warehouse in Virginia Beach, and then we can supply anywhere in the States within 5 working days from our website. So it was time to tell the world about this. But because all the money went on the product, we couldn't afford a marketing agency. So Erica and I flew over here. We got 90 days on a visa, which is the max you get on a UK-US visa. And we have bought a secondhand minivan on the West Coast, which we're going to sell on the East Coast before we fly home on June the 27th. And we are out to spread the 33 Shake love as far and as wide as we can, introduce people to our groundbreaking product, and hopefully have a real lot of fun along the way. You know, I might have said it before, the Beatles had a week, we've got 3 months.
hey Warren, if I was schedule, or if I was to plan a cross-country tour, I would start on one side of the United States, and I would drive from that one side to the other side. And I'm looking at your website right now, which shows all of the dates starting on April 5th in Seattle. You go from Seattle to Portland to Bend, which is on the West Coast. Then all of a sudden you zip over to Bozeman, Montana, down to Pocatello, down to Salt Lake City, and then you come back to California. Are you trying to wear out that van?
Well, I'm really hopeful that it's in good nick, because it's already got 128,000 miles on the clock. If anyone sees a stranded 33 Shake van, please do stop. But so far, touch wood, it hasn't missed a beat. You know, we're kind of...
touch wood. Touch wood. I hadn't heard the phrase used quite like that.
Does that mean something else over here? Because if it does, we might need to rate this podcast differently. It's an expression used for good luck in England, and it's not that sort of wood, if anyone's listening.
Well, you just go to Urban Dictionary and look it up and see what you come up with, Warren. Now, go right ahead.
So the route's pretty organic. You know, we knew we had to start on the west because of the weather. It seems to be getting warmer here first, and then we'd finish in the east. And in between there, we're kind of going, where people want to see us, where we can find people, where we want to hang out with people, where people we like are. And that's not a straight line. If we took a straight line, we'd miss too much. So we are weaving our way all over the country. So if you're out there and you think you'd like the 33 Shake Tour to visit, you want to find out what our gel's all about and have some fun. If you think, nah, I'm just too remote, they'd never come here, don't believe it. Send us a line, get in touch with us any way you like, and we will come, we promise.
Hey, Scott, if you take a close look like I am right now, and his points, if I try to connect them, you know what I'm seeing here is the number 3. It's as if he's making 33, spelling out 33 Shake with the United States and his van.
Are you doing a GPS track so that you can show the map of the U.S. when you're done, and it will say 33 Shake all the way across the United States?
Well, we've got a candle on top of the van and the world's biggest time-lapse camera on a satellite. I can't believe you've blown that one already. You're too clever.
Hey, Warren, when is it that you're going to land here in Roseville, Rockland, Auburn area, our Northern California home of Trail Runner Nation and Studio G?
Well, brace yourselves, because I believe we're landing in your neighborhood on Sunday, and we have a good 2 or 3 days to hang out there, get under your feet, and experience Studio G. I have to ask you, though, what is Studio G?
Wait, Scott, maybe you have the answer for this. I know my answer.
Here? Well, you've experienced Studio G. You and Erica have actually been to Studio G. That's our professional recording studio.
You see, I didn't know it was called Studio G. I just knew it was the studio.
It's the card table that gets opened up when it's time to do the podcast, and then we scramble for all the gear, place it on top, and G happens to be the suite number that we're in. So Studio G it is.
Studio G sounds good. I thought it was just a permanently set professional studio with a green room nearby and a rider for all the artists. That was right, wasn't it?
Well, that's how we like to try to describe it for those that haven't seen it.
That's why your video's turned off. You know people are here watching.
Excellent.
Hey, Warren, yeah. For those who have not listened to some of our information about 33 Shake, can you give us a quick elevator speech about what 33 Shake is and why someone would want to get on your website at 33shake.com and have you request to come visit them?
Absolutely. So here's the drill in as short as I can make it. I've spent years running ultras, and I've spent years with stomach trouble, illness, throwing up, and really not enjoying my nutrition. I met a lot of elite athletes. They all go with a whole food diet first. Suddenly the penny dropped. We're eating whole foods, and we know that natural stuff is what we need for a good diet, yet on race day we're eating junk food. 33 Shake is an attempt to bridge that gap to give us real, whole food, powerful nutrition that genuinely transforms your performance. The reason for that is we are spending so much more than the average company on the ingredients and the production of what we make that you will feel a difference. And we manage to do that by not paying for a traditional retail supply chain. Instead, we sell direct online only at 33shake.com. You should feel a difference using what we make. I know I did, and I know since we've been on sale in the UK in 2012, a lot of other people have. And now it seems people are starting to feel that in America as well.
Well, fantastic. We look forward to you arriving here in Studio G, and we'll go. You got 2 to 3 days here. We're going to go for a run. We're going to have a great time, and we're going to eat some of that fantastic 33 Shake in the satchel and just live large.
The satchel, the sachet, the packet, we do now know about. Please, for anyone who does read the back of our packets and wonders when we're talking about sachet, just substitute that word for packet. We promise it will be gone on the next reprint.
Sounds good. Scott, anything from your end?
I want to know who's hosting you in Pocatello.
So in Pocatello here, it's John Bryan, the man who's sitting next to me. I think you should hear from him.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, John, how's it going?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you.
Is Warren treating you well? I mean, we've always found him to be just a fantastic guest.
He's wonderful. He's welcome anytime, I told him.
Hey, have you tried the 33 Shake? Tell us what it tastes like.
That was amazed. It tastes really good for chia.
Well, touch wood. Everything works out well, and we'll see you arrive around 10 p.m. over here in our neck of the woods. Now go out and chia.
33.
Mas.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra-running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You record this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
It is what it is.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman. Scott War is out doing some things. There's a race today, and he's been on race announcing duty out there, and they let me slip away so I could come over here and sit at a table next to Dan Williams, Ann Tilges, Sally McRae, and Ann Trayson, and I hold this spot here that's making the introduction, and I'm really excited about this podcast, and I want to tell you why. Number one, Dan Williams, to my left, has been just a running mentor for me, and whether you know that or not, Dan, I've had information that's been passed down directly from you and then from others that you have influenced, one being Lee McKinley. I've spent a lot of time running with Lee, and he's taught me a lot of lessons, and he attributed some of those lessons to you. He didn't claim them as his own, but he said, I learned that from Dan Williams. I want to tell you my favorite Dan Williams story. Is it okay if I just jump into that?
Yes, I know. I'd love it. Because now I have tears in my eyes.
Now I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to start crying.
One of the fun things about the relationship between Ann and Dan is they trained a lot together. And so that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. And they're opposed to one another or sitting across from one another at this round table so they can really look at each other and get into some of these stories. And I can't wait to hear from them. I can't wait to hear from them. So as I start out, I want to tell my Dan Williams story. And I had a chance to run with Dan some years back. It was a long run. And it was a 5 or 6 hour run. And it was I probably had no business running with both you yourself, Dan Williams, and Lee McKinley. You guys are very talented and out of my league, but I hung in there and ran it. And I remember coming back in about 2 to 3 miles left in the run.
Was this on the Western States Trail?
It was on the Western States Trail, Dan. And we were coming back towards Auburn, and I was just hanging in there for my life. And it was a hot day. And I was so, so happy to be approaching home, right, with about a couple, 2, 3 miles left. And all of a sudden, Dan says, oh, I'm so bummed out. I thought, why? Why is he bummed out? I'm kind of happy that we're almost done. I'm celebrating. And he said, I just love running so much, and I just love this trail, and I know it's going to be over soon, and we're going to be back. And to me, that had such an influence on me, and I had always hoped to be able to have the passion for trail running and, regardless of conditions, just embrace it with that kind of enthusiasm. So, Dan Williams, thank you for teaching me that lesson, that it's bigger than any problem that you might be experiencing. Mm-hmm. Trail running is a gift, and that's something that you've taught me. So thank you for that. Had I told you that story before?
And I didn't even know it.
I hadn't told you that story?
Dan, say something about Lee. A lot of many people may not know how talented Lee McKinley is.
Lee McKinley's been on the podcast. But, we don't talk about how talented he is sometimes. So Lee McKinley is a good trail running friend of both of ours and Ann as well. So tell us a little bit about Lee McKinley.
So Mac, as I call him.
Oh, sure. It is Mac.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Mac McKinley. He goes by Lee, but... So anyway, he's mostly into triathlons now. So he rides his bike, I don't know, hundreds of miles a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's always been a good runner. And I guess he spends time in the pool also, but he's done Hawaii. Actually, he's going to Hawaii again this fall.
Right.
Qualified. Mm-hmm. Second or third time, perhaps.
Yeah. Kona.
Yeah. And I'm kind of sorry that he doesn't run more ultras anymore, because he's done Western States, a couple of 3 times.
Oh, yeah. Very talented. And it seems like Mac just keeps getting faster and faster. And we all kind of waiting for him to slow down, but he's not.
He is. He's in his 50s now. And almost every event he enters, he wins the age division.
Right. And he just did Way to Cool, which is a 50K, and just incredibly strong and amazing athlete. Mm-hmm. Just he intimidates me to go out and run with him. It's like I have to taper just for a training run. he's doing
that's
very
how
good.
It was there with them. But now Ann here has done Kona. Did you know anyone?
We didn't know that. So Ann Tilges, who joins us on this podcast too and part of this roundtable discussion, we haven't even really announced the topic yet. And so we're about to do that. But Ann, welcome to this podcast, and we appreciate you joining in.
I'm so glad that you are allowing me to join in.
Are you kidding? You know, it's something that we do here. We embrace community members, so thanks for showing up. Today's topic, our preparation has really been a text amongst all of us and just a sentence, right? And it was, what's the same and what's changed? So when did you first start running, Dan, in the sport?
Oh, well, start running?
Well, not running, but...
High school track, 1963.
Okay, 63 track. But when did you start hitting the trail and kind of experiencing...
I really enjoyed running cross-country up in the trails in the Oakland Hills in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
But so then, I went through the usual progression, 10Ks, half marathons, then marathon, 1977. But I ran my first ultra, 50K, the Skyline 50K in 1982. Mm. And people asked me, they told me I would be good at ultras. And I said, no, marathon's plenty far enough. Mm-hmm. You know, no one should, that's crazy. And then I thought, well, I was in pretty good shape in 1982. I'd run 232 at San Francisco. I thought, Skyline 50K was about a month later. I said, well, maybe I'll try it. It's only another 5 miles. Well, I ended up winning it and setting a new record.
Wow.
I thought, well, why am I good at ultra marathon running? I mean, it'd be better to be good at the 100-yard dash because you can do four races in a weekend. But ultra marathons, you have to take 6 months to recover.
And since then, the number of Western States finishes, how many? We talked about it, 20?
21.
21 Western States finishes, 5 American River 50s, which was just run here locally.
No, 10.
Well, 5 was in my head because of the 50, I guess. But, yeah, 10 American River 50s and a number of other races along the way. So lots of experience to discuss, mm-hmm. right? So here we sit, and we know Ann's experience. We know that she's been out there and run plenty. How many Western States total?
I have 14, but I didn't finish the first two times. Yeah. And one of those years, I'm going to credit to Dan.
Okay.
Yeah, because he runs so hard that it was like, sometimes you have to pick your training partners on your easy days. And Dan was not a training partner for your easy days.
Okay, so that's going to go into the training section coming up. So with our topic, we're gonna hit what's the same, what's different. So we're going to talk about training, gear. And we're going to talk about philosophies, culture. We're just going to take some things out of the hat and throw it up in the air and talk about now and back when we started or when you guys started. How's that sound, Sally McRae?
Awesome.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Bring it on.
We did mention 14 finishes for Ann. I think there's about 14 Cougars around here. Is that right? Finish first
roughly.
Places.
She has so many. She's given them away as gifts to others.
No, I'm just loaning them out. Don't get Craig upset at me.
Yeah, there's some trouble with that.
You don't want to put that on eBay. That would be bad.
Wasn't there a buckle on eBay one time?
We talked about that today. Some runner.
$300 apparently.
Which is less than the entry, so maybe it was a good deal. And no training. You have to travel. No hotel. So let's start off with what's changed and what's the same. So let's start with, should we start with training? Is that a good place to start? Let's talk about your training, because I've heard about Dan's and Ann's epic runs from Robinson Flat, which is mile
30
to the river.
78.
So that was a staple, mile 30 to 78, yeah. And you knew them well. Let's talk about that run. What kind of staple? Was it monthly, weekly? What'd you do? Tell us, Dan. We're ready to hear.
The 1 year I remember, I did it 3 times, and I think they're 2 weeks apart. Each.
Yeah, and we try and do 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a week to recover. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first, I remember the first one was, I ran it in like 7:05, and then 2 weeks later, 7 flat, and then 2 weeks after that, 6:55.
And was he keeping a watch on this run?
Yeah, I hated that watch.
Yes, you're right. There was a time when she made me not wear a watch when we would show up for training runs.
Yeah, because I wanted an easy day, and he'd be like, oh, you know, I know we're doing easy, but we're still 58 seconds the last time we hit this bridge. And I'm like, geez, really? Yep. So I made him put it in. He was so sad. I made him put him in, lock it in his car. Uh-huh. It was at Brioni's. I remember that.
Yes, I
because there
right.
were cattle gates, and he would like, or this guard thing, and he'd like, should I stop it now, or is it when you hit the gate? And I'm like, who cares? Right. Yeah, so true.
When you guys ran together and trained together, who led? Who was behind? Did
Dan
you train
was
off?
Always, because he's an awesome downhill runner. You learn, if you want to know how to run downhill, Dan was the man.
Dan, I do want to learn to run downhill. Let's talk about that in a minute. So he normally led.
Side by side or Dan, because I learned so much from he's such an awesome downhill runner.
Yeah.
That's how you learn.
Right. You find somebody better and then
you
try
runs,
to hang
run,
on.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So what did he teach you, Ann, about downhill running?
Quick steps. Yep. You had really quick, and also have no fear. Dan had no fear. And he taught it to Christina. You were
his
good
daughter.
At that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, I babysat her. Yeah. And she ran Western States. How old am I? Yeah. And I got to pace her. Gets better. Yeah, and I did. But no, Dan had no fear, but he also had, and he led from the hips. Like, he would steer from the hips. And it was like watching someone dance through the rocks. Mm. I never could perfect it. There were only two people, Dan and Bob Bunnell. Oh. You guys were awesome downhill runners, so that's what I learned.
I always attributed that to just dumb luck. It's like I just say it's my skeletal structure is that way.
Yeah,
I That's it. And then Christina's a good downhill runner, too, so she probably has the same genetics that I do.
Shorter steps. So tell us about shorter steps, either one of you, because I'm interested. Maybe I'm stepping too far. Maybe I could be as fast as Dan and Ann if I just wouldn't step so far. So tell me about short steps.
Well, I keep thinking it was longer steps, but quicker. maybe since she's behind me, she thought they were short, but I think they were long and fast. That's the key to running downhill. Fast.
Yeah.
Fast. And not care if you fall.
So, go ahead.
Well, no, I had plenty of strength in my legs. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the no fear comes from, just being strong.
I wonder if running without fear helps you avoid falling. Maybe when you're a bit tentative and careful. Sally, what do you think about that statement? Do you think there's any truth to that?
Yeah, I think a lot of times the best way to approach trail running as a whole is like a kid.
Oh.
I mean, if you run like a kid downhill, I mean, it's the same thing, I guess, with anything that kids do. They're non-assuming. They don't understand consequences. Like, you know, when they first start anything, it's so much fun to watch a kid, you know, have fun. And I think if you overthink, especially in technical, on technical trail, like single track has lots of rocks and roots and leaves where you can slip. I mean, you can really focus on, oh my gosh, if I step on that or step there, I'm going to, you know, I can totally trip. And then you end up changing your gait and the position of your body. So you end up being like in this seated position, a lot of time, which you slow down. So you just start braking the whole entire time. And you can actually, I think you can trip more doing that because you're so focused on every single little rock. But I think our brains kind of, they know what to do. So you don't need to stare down at your feet, you know, look ahead. I think the reach really with the stride, the reach should come from behind when you open up your stride, because it is going to go quick. If you reach forward, which I think a lot of people do and they're flying downhill, that's where you trash your IT bands and your quads. So if you have a good sense of the center of your body, you have good core strength, good stability. That's why I'm so big on like the single leg exercises. If you're good on one leg, then you are going to be able to fly downhill because you won't have to constantly rebalance your body, because you're already able to feel it balanced out. So, you know, I think that you get strong, like Dan was saying, you get strong, get stable, and just go.
But that's what's different. When I did it, core wasn't that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I think core now and keeping your center of gravity, I wish I saw some films. Billy, thank you, brought some films when I was running as a kid, Billy Yang. And I was like, oh my God, I had no, like, course. You could tell watching, because I just saw a clip people probably don't know, Francie LaRue. There's some really good video of her. And she was an awesome 10,000 meter runner. She also ran the marathon. But you could, and it was when she was in high school, and she had, you could tell she had really good core strength. And I never had that. No one taught me like core. I don't know about you, Anne, but I was like core.
Well,
like,
the thing that's going through my mind is, Anne, if you didn't have core strength, how did you win all of those races?
I was training with someone great, dude.
you can naturally get some core strength by being out there.
You can be, but I think building more core and stability is like something I spend a lot more time with people with, and I think it really helps. Mm-hmm. And that's where Sally's, oh my God, she's like, you should watch her videos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what she can do, I'm like, I could never have done that.
But I think people, we're way more sedentary. We sit a lot more. Yeah. So runners, the injuries that runners are getting today, a lot of it is attributed to weak hips, weak glutes. So many injuries are related to
that. I call it
the
ultra running disease.
Yeah. But
it's, no, it is.
But we do, I mean, we sit a lot. We're in this tight seated position, and it just sets us up for IT band injuries, knee injuries, you know, piriformis. I mean, it's really frustrating. And so I think a lot of times runners are like, yeah, you know, I run 5 days a week, and they're putting in maybe 9 hours of running a week, but then you look at the rest of their day and it's like, yeah, you're sitting for 12 hours a day. And so it's, you know, that doesn't really help with your overall, you know, strength. And I think we're
walking
just
desks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Walking desks. Yes.
There was something that I learned long ago too, that makes me think of this, is that running requires a lot of core strength, but running does not build core strength.
Exactly. And so then that's what I thought.
Because we think of training as that's what's building our strength and building our speed, but that's with core, it's different. Running does not build your core.
That's interesting. Yeah, you can race a car, but you still need to maintain it, tune it up, and rotate tires and check things, right? You just can't go out there and use. It's fun sitting here with some coaches, because Sally, you do some coaching, and obviously you do
the
some
coaching. The Dan coach, too. Yeah, I just found that out. Couch to 5K.
Is that right?
Yeah, ask her about it. Yeah,
I will, yeah.
Yeah, really.
And we will. And Dan, you're coaching too. So you're doing some coaching. And so we'll get into some of that stuff. And I think it'll just kind of show up as we go through a discussion that keep in mind that we are in front of some coaches. And if you like what you hear and you want to get some coaching, you know, you can reach out and to get Dan or Ann or Sally, if they're available in their schedules, to get some coaching done. Right?
Hey. Yep.
Good. Sally, do you practice some of your downhill free, let it go, fast and move, furious, fearless running? Do you need to practice that on the regular?
I do practice regularly. It's my favorite. And Anne knows. I mean, she'll put it specifically in my training plan when she wants me. She'll say work the downs. It's kind of like her thing. So there'll be really specific times during the week where that is exactly what I'm focusing on. I've talked about Mount Wilson quite a bit. It's a great, really accessible, big mountain that I can get into back home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot, you know, there's long sections that are very technical, single track, you know, tight switchbacks. And that's where I love to practice it, because it challenges me to have quick feet. And when I go out and I know that it's a downhill day, I'm super, super focused. I mean, it goes by so quick, but I think about every single section that I'm doing and kind of focus on, okay, I'm going to focus on my form right here, or I'm going to, you know, focus on leg turnover, speed. I mean, there's so much that you can really focus on. And it also reveals to me a lot of my weaknesses. There was a couple times back in 2004, I think it was 2014, I fell really, really hard on a group run with some friends. And I noticed that just naturally, the next time I went out to run, I was a lot slower. And I realized it was just my brain, like, remembering, because I still had, like, pain in my knee. And I was afraid. And so, which is, I guess, a natural reaction. But I had to really talk to myself and remind myself, like, yeah, it's part of it, but we still need to run the same, and there's a chance you can always fall, and just kind of get over that fear again. And so I think it's always an ongoing process. And not only that, there's so many different types of hills and mountains you can climb. And I think one of the most important thing is that if you practice downhill running, that you need to practice it on all different terrains, on all different decline grades. You know, you can run super fast on a fire road that has, you know, maybe a 6%, you know, decline, but then try going on a single track that's super technical with 15%, you know, decline. And it's, you have to be able to feel your body and adjust body placement and feeling the center of your body mass. And, you know, how can I really push it here? And, you know, where do I need to kind of slow down? And, but yeah, I think it's a big, I think more people tend to, especially in a hilly or a really mountainous race, they really focus on the climbing. You know, you need to get strong climbing and fast. But most people are broken down in a race because they didn't practice their downhilling. And so they either blow out their IT bands, their lower back and hips are trashed. And that could be, you know, it's disheartening, but it's like 80 miles into a 100-mile race. You see it all the time. People that were super fast, but now they can barely move their legs.
They have to go downhill. I mean, so many people get to the canyons now. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a little change at Western States. And they can't run downhills.
Yeah,
and I like all these people, like they're in Minnesota or like whatever, and they're like, oh, you can get on a treadmill. You can do uphills. Mm. You can't do those downhills. Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless you get some cinder blocks. If you have your own, you can get some cinder blocks and prop up the back of the treadmill. That's one.
Oh, I never. Does it break? Do you have to have a special, really?
Well, the gym doesn't care for you too much.
Gym won't, but if you have your own personal treadmill,
oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah. Cinder block? Just prop up the back. with some cinder blocks.
Because I'm like 3% to 6% because Alberto Salazar made me get treadmill, didn't he? It's like, really, you got to get this if you do downhill. At 3% downhill, I would do mile repeats on. It's kind of cheating. But I never thought cinder, whoa.
Yeah, my gym has 3%
Yeah, I know, but man.
But it's not enough. But you are getting that effect. The downhill, like there's no other way to train it.
Yeah.
You can do as many squats as you want, lunges, but that positioning of your body, the ankle placement, you have to get on a downhill.
Dan, do you remember the time I fell? Do you remember going down from the... Oh, yeah.
Well, he's like... Michigan Bluff, right?
Yeah.
Down into El Dorado.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yes, right.
And I was thinking, I'll never be able to run Western States. I was so afraid. He's like, do I need to take a suture kit when I go out running with you? That's what he was like.
Did he stop his watch
during
the fall?
I'm sure he did.
Because you don't have
Rick Spady was with us.
Oh, it was
right?
Rick Spady?
Yeah.
And you guys, do you need to get the hospital? I'm like, nah, it looks fine. He's like, I think I need... you did say that. I think I need a suture kit. I was like, great, yay.
Well, don't you have a treadmill with the downhill?
I have 3%, but it's a cinder block.
You use it for comrades.
Yeah, but comrade, that would be awesome.
Isn't Nordic Track just came out with one?
Nordic Track came
incline and 6% decline.
6%, yeah. Someone just got one, a friend of mine. Yeah.
I know Zach Miller.
He uses one.
Zach
Bitter. Yeah, Zach.
Sorry. Zach Bitter has one.
Yeah, he does, and they're cheap, relatively.
Yeah.
And then you could put cinder blocks and not worry about it. I'd be worried it would, like...
Yeah, it's not made for that, but
how many of your clients like need to get treadmills every year?
Are you selling treadmills over there, Sally? I'm going to go to SallyMcCrae.com and see if you've got a link to it.
I'm actually just selling cinder blocks.
Yeah. There's more money in the treadmill. Not a whole lot of margin in the block itself. Dan, did you practice downhill? Did you do that consciously? Did it come natural to you, or did you still need to practice it?
It was fun.
Yeah.
It was just fun. It's like... I'm a big fan of event-specific training. So it's like for Western States, you run the downhills. So it's like even with my clients, I tell them, I know you're doing hill repeats on the uphills, but you got to go out and run the downhills. And they say, really?
Hmm.
And it's like, yeah, go run the downhills, especially if you're entered in Western States. There's a 5,000-foot net descent. But
I like having them do downhill repeats. Yay, I do.
Yeah.
They're like, really? The first time, and they're like, oh, did you do a misprint? Because I'm big for my typos.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, that's really true. Yeah.
Good. So speed training? You guys do some speed training back there? Or is it all part of,
downhills.
Downhills your speed training. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, that's turnover, right? So I guess naturally it would be speed training. Any track work?
Not for Western States or 100 milers. I mean... Okay. My go-to workout for marathons was 800s, like 10 800s,
Oh, yeah.
But not in ultras.
Did you plug some of those 800s into your training periods or cycles just to make sure that when your big long races came around that you had some leg turnover speed?
Well, no, I people get all caught up in the long distance, the long, slow distance stuff for ultras.
Yeah.
And I just ended up calling it the ultra slog.
Yeah.
Like you pile on 100 miles in 1 week, but it's all just at the same slow
pace.
So for that, I use tempo runs. And a tempo run could be, 7 to 12 miles that, up tempo is like as fast as you can. It's like, one guy used to say ball is the wall, but anyway, but like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we all know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. For like every Wednesday or something like that.
Yeah.
But we used to do that on Wednesdays around Phoenix Lake over in Marin County. We just, Frank Rona and, it used to be Jim Nusi or whatever.
Oh, and Bob Bunnell.
Bob Bunnell.
And even Brian Purcell.
Yeah, Brian would show up. And
he was there today and did well. Yeah.
It's a different Brian Purcell, the original Brian Purcell. There are two of them.
Yeah. There are two.
Okay.
And they're like 10 years apart in age.
And but the one Brian, the older Brian, he's older. Yeah.
Yeah.
He won Western States 1 year.
In 1989?
89, yeah. Yep.
Or 88, maybe.
Yeah, it was 80-something.
Yes. Hmm. So he was pretty fast. And then from there, he went on to get on the U.S. 100K team, and I think he went to Japan that year or whatever.
How many miles a week were you running then? And let's talk about what you recommend for clients today. So, we all hear these big miles, or you don't need big miles, or what did you do back in the day? And has it evolved as things sometimes change in time? So whoever wants to take that question.
I'd love to know what Anne's doing now. Well, she just moved to Auburn. She's like, I'm into trail running. I'm like, well, so how many miles are you doing?
Well,
Well, the one thing that I was thinking about is what's changed. Okay. Is, say, maybe in, let's say, the 90s or so, the kind of training that we were doing, and I would say running or triathlon, then it kind of changed and we were getting more into different kinds of intervals and things like that, and using the Garmin and using the wattage meters, mm-hmm. and things like that. But now I feel like it's shifting back to, mm-hmm. going by feel and perceived effort and, mm-hmm. some of those sorts of things. And even heart rate. That's another, you know, heart rate monitors kind of went out of style for a while, but now they're coming back and, mm-hmm. using those. So my perception is that it has evolved. It changed, and now it's coming back to the way we used to train.
Just like everything, like, yeah. clothes and styles, yeah, yeah. and hair, haircuts. And,
yep.
Yeah, things kind of have cycles, yeah. natural cycles.
Yeah, so that's the thing that, and that's what I like, because, mm-hmm. I just feel like, yeah, we always did know what we needed to do.
Yeah.
And so we're going back to that, is what my perception is, you know, more perceived effort and some of the older, you know, that we don't need some of the technology that, started coming in vogue. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, just go back to the basics again, and that works.
Good comments.
You know, this is where I think some of the technology comes in. It's like, to answer your question, mm-hmm. I need to know where the person is starting from, and that, a lot of that's simply genetic, like the maximum heart rate, mm-hmm. and resting heart rate, and unfortunately max VO2. I mean, max VO2 is genetic, so that one's a hard one to figure out. So if it's more of an elite athlete, I can have them do...
What's elite mean?
Well, if you could, let's just say you could finish in the top 10 runners, okay. or whatever.
Sorry. I just never knew that. So when I came back, we were like elite. I'm like, whoa, what's that? I'm just giving Dan grief. I can't stop. Sorry. I will.
It started back when you guys ran together, and it continues today. Some things never change. I have good friends like that, too. It's comforting.
There are people who called us, we act more like brothers and sisters together because we've known each other for so long and give each other grief. And
can
we have so many
interject
stories.
A question, though?
Yeah.
It hopefully not off topic exactly, but talking about what has changed with training,
yeah.
perhaps we could go back and look at who were some of the winners on some of these races, maybe in the 80s, 90s, mm-hmm. and the records, and have the records changed? So therefore, the training, if it's been changing in more recent years, is it showing up with faster times, course records, for example?
Funny you should mention that. Thanks for prompting me to talk a little bit about, and Ann doesn't know I'm going to say this, but we pulled up today, since it was AR50, just to check out some of the times and some of the runners and things that were happening back a few years ago. So as I look at the top performances for females at AR50, in 1993, Anne held the record at a 6:09, which is incredibly fast. Still, runners are out there trying to catch her, and they're not doing it. But if you want to catch Anne's first place, you have to pass her second place, which is a 6:11. And then Ellie Greenwood came along in 2012 and posted a 6:18, but Anne, again, a 6:23. So some things haven't changed, and those are the strong records set. Mm-hmm. And holds some of those. Same thing with the men, though. When we look over at the men, and Jim Howard, back in 1981, a 5:32, and it still stands. And that's incredible to me. Why are those records still standing?
Well, that particular one, he ran in the downhill direction.
It is true. They did that. But now, so, Jim was talented.
No.
People really don't give someone like Jim Howard credit.
Yeah.
So here's the one story. He, in 19, what was it, 82 or 3, he won Western States.
I didn't know about Western States back then, sorry.
And he won Western States, and 2 weeks later ran a 2:19 marathon at San Francisco.
Wow.
So that's talent.
That's talent. That's raw talent. That's elite. If you want to
get there, you go. That's, you know, elite.
Yeah, you go through Wikipedia, it's going to have a picture of Jim Howard then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. So how are those records still just standing? I know you said it was downhill, but that's still some amazing...
It was just the 1 year. I think they swapped it out once or twice is all, but all the rest have been uphill.
Okay, so Tom Johnson, 1994,
right?
A 5:33. Rich Hanna, a 5:37.
Right.
And I talked to Rich today because he has Capital Road Race Management. He does a lot of timing, do a lot of races, mm-hmm. around here. And I talked to him about that. Interesting story. I don't know if you guys know it. And he would never tell it, especially in a public venue like this. But I'm going to do it because I'm going to take a chance, right? Maybe he doesn't listen to this. So Rich ran that race, and he stopped
and three different times and spent about 6 to 7 minutes because he was waiting to run with somebody else. And had he done that, he would have been a sub-5:30. A very talented runner. And mm-hmm. and 20 years later, he has gone out and near matched his time that he ran at Way to Cool. He's just one of those amazing elite athletes that you're talking about. Raw talent, genetics, mm-hmm. all the things, and
but
passion.
But he has
and
some
loves
of
it.
The most beautiful form. Mm-hmm. I mean, he mm-hmm. doesn't touch the ground. If yeah. you want to match, there are a few people. Mark Rickman. Awesome. There's some people, when you watch mm-hmm. them, they're just like, and Francie LaRue. You can just look. They are gifted. Mm. Like, they have the flow. I don't know how to explain it. You just see them running, and you're like, yeah, I wish I could do that. But you mm-hmm. don't. But you, they're just like born. Honestly, that's stupid because everyone talks about born to run. But these kids, they're born to run. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's gorgeous. I think he has one of the most beautiful forms I've ever seen.
He ran today through the parking lot because he had to go get something. And we looked up, and Scott said, man, look at that gait, because we couldn't tell it was him. And then as he got fast, you know, came closer, it's like, oh, that's Rich Hanna. And it was just an obvious difference. It's like, man, that is clean. You know, the stride's efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, you got the right term. I think it's efficient.
Yeah.
He was very efficient, and but he still had a hard time at Western States. Let's be true.
Well.
Remember the day I ended up, yeah. It's funny. Like, you can have all that talent, but take someone like Sally here or someone like who really, like, puts it all together. Dan has it 21 times. But you have to put it all together. And, I mean, you'd think Rich would, like, run 14 hours at States.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there's a lot more that goes into the ultras than even a 50-mile, and that's what makes it fun.
The problem-solving that you
talked
about.
The problem-solving,
right?
Or anything that can happen. Yeah, I mean, Rich and I have a thing because we both got pulled at mile 93. Yeah. And he ended up in the hospital. It was probably the same thing I had. Yeah, he was doing well. And they let him in? I don't even remember that. Yeah. Yeah, but I got pulled at 93.
Hmm.
Prize. Yay.
You got pulled at 93?
Yeah, at mile 93.
Oh, at mile. Give us a few details on that. And I don't want to avoid your question. You started us on a good thread.
Did,
so let's
Anne's
get back
good.
To that. Let's get back to that.
No, yeah, but 93, I was stupid. And I got dehydrated and I went there and I just started like doing the sympathy card. And they said, oh, well, if it's a real sympathy, you get an IV. Right?
Yeah.
I was watching all those films with Jim Howard and Jim King at Leadville. And they all take an IV and they let them go.
Mm.
So I'm like, yeah, give me an IV. I'll get to go. And they give me the IV. And Bob Lind, who unfortunately passed away, was the medical director, really nice guy, comes with the big scissors and like, clop, there goes your bed. I was like, really? He's like, IV, you're out. And I was like in second overall. I was like, I could have crawled to the finish. Of course, I'm young, so I'm like bawling. And oh my God, it was horrible. But yeah, you don't take an IV at Western States, folks.
No.
I don't even know if they allowed it at Leadville. But he did. Rich Hanna ended up in the hospital with kidney failure.
Hmm.
That was bad. Yeah, you can do some, yeah, you got to listen to your body, and that's where Anne's really good. You do. I think all of what she's saying is totally on. You've got to be able to listen to your body to know what's really happening out there. You can have, it's nice training to have your heart rate monitor and all that, but you can do, you know, it's 100 miles is a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
You've got to learn to listen to those clues that you can't get from a watch or a digital number.
I don't think so. Maybe some people can. But I think Anne had a really good point there.
Yeah.
I think all of that is trying to get you to tune into your body. How about that?
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. And if you're looking at the watch, whether it's your GPS watch or whatever, and you're looking at those numbers and paying attention to those numbers, then you're not paying attention to what's going on inside your own body as far as, and all, the same with, like, we think about, there's been a lot of talk about the water, how much you should be drinking. Mm-hmm. And if you're going by a set, oh, my watch is beeping, that means I'm supposed to drink now. But you're not going by feel, and am I thirsty or not? Then, you know, things like that are going to get you into trouble. And so I think that, and that's what I wonder about, is that why many of the records are so old? Because we need to move back to some of those older ways of training. Mm.
So you're saying that technology has hampered us a bit and maybe holding us back.
Perhaps.
And not allowing those athletes to listen to themselves, which is a better tool, just intuitively running.
Yes.
There's one aspect of listening to yourself or your body, and that's the experience of it. So the trouble with these ultras is that after 70 miles, you may only do it once a year. Mm. So you don't do 70 or 80 mile training runs to see what your stomach's going to do at that point.
Mm.
So listening to your body and that experience, it's like you don't know. You have to go from, like, I know some guys run 60 a year or whatever, hundreds, but most of us run one or two maybe a year. Mm-hmm. And to learn what you've to do with your body, you've got to have more experience at it.
And that's why I have people write race reports.
Yes.
Because I couldn't remember either. So now I have them write something down, and then when they're going to do 100, I said, read your last race report.
That's what I tell all my clients to do. It's like within the week after, mm-hmm. give yourself a couple of days to recover.
Right.
So it's just like, oh, I'm never going to do anything again. So you write it down and save it for next time. You know, what did you do right and what did you do wrong? How can you improve your training next time?
So how many miles did you guys run when you were in your training days together? How many miles per week was typical then? And then we'll talk about now.
My typical was 80. But, 80 miles. You know, sometimes over 100 and uh-huh. like that. I think she ran 120 every week.
No, I was doing it. The max was, I found 100 worked for me, but I didn't run all my hard days. I mean, uh-huh. Dan, I mean, every time, talk about taper, I mean, his was like, go, go, go. There wasn't like, no, like, off switch.
Can we back up? Did you say you didn't run on your
Oh, no, I just didn't run that hard. Oh. I mean, I knew if it was an easy day, sorry, Dan. I'd be like, I can't run with Dan. I love Dan. And he used to work in Velosport at Berkeley, so I could run partway with him, and he'd call me. I was like, nope. Then I'd make some excuse, sorry. Because I knew if I did, it would be bad because we loved it so much that we'd end up, like, running each other into the ground. But I really felt, for me, 100 miles, mentally and physical, because there's a part of mental that I need. That was a good number. Anything mm-hmm. over 100, it was iffy. But sometimes you'd just get caught up and you'd be like.
And did you run 2-a-days?
I love 2-a-days.
Yeah.
I really think for endurance, I think. And now even doing, did you do 2? Like, well, trialing, you have to.
Oh, yeah. 3-a-days.
3-a-days. No, sometimes when I did my 24-hour, the only one I finished, I did like 3-a-day runs, but just 5-5-5. So you know, like if you're doing now all these 6 days and yay, whatever, 96 hours, born to run, getting out there 3 times a day, it doesn't have to be much. It really does help.
Hmm.
I don't know, does Sally, like, she's so busy, she's probably like once a day is fine, but I love the double workouts. Oh, well, Dan did double. He'd run to Berkeley and back from El Sobrante. It was 10 miles each way, too. Right.
Yep.
It was.
Yep.
Sally, you're being coached by Ann. We know that, right? So, Ann, is she a good student?
Oh, my God. Sally's the best.
Yeah?
No, seriously. I was a little worried. I mean, to me, it was hard because I'm like, wow, she's coaching. I mean, this is going to be like kind of like, I don't know. But honestly, it's been one of the biggest joys of my life. And I don't say that lightly. I really don't.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch her blossom and collaborate because to me, coaching isn't like a dictation. It's like, you collaborate, you kind of work. Her goals became my goals, and we've, like, developed kind of a relationship that even if she found someone else, I feel really like it's always going to be there, and it's like a connection that I don't think we can ever sever. Maybe I'm being arrogant here, yay, but no, I really feel that way.
So, Sally, you coach people. Do you think you're a better student, and I'll use the word student, but coachable athlete. Do you think you're more coachable because you coach yourself? You know, you coach others, and so do you receive coaching better from your coach?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand what her day is like, what she's going through, the challenges of even just online coaching. You know, I think that if I lived in the same city as Anne, I'd probably see her every single day. That's why I'm up here so much. I love the face-to-face, you know, interaction. But I definitely understand the difference too, like even more so having been coached by her. And we actually had this conversation yesterday, like just as an athlete, like I've gotten so much better just overall. And for years I thought I could coach myself. And I think once I started working with Anne, I realized like, no, I cannot coach myself, because I think in every relationship, there's what you know about yourself, what you think you know about yourself, and lots of things that you just don't see about yourself. And so to find somebody that understands you, that you can trust, and kind of give all your goals to and say, all right, just tell me what to do. I mean, that was not easy in the beginning, because, you know, I've followed Ann long before I even got into trail running, and just a huge inspiration for me. And it was, you know, it was scary to kind of think like, oh my gosh, this amazing legend is going to coach me. And on one hand, I was like, I want to do everything right, you know, but I'm also known for kind of running myself into the ground too. And I think what I ended up realizing was like, that was probably the greatest need that I had. And she came in and showed me that. It wasn't that I had to learn how to train. I would love to train 3 times a day, actually.
No, but see, I have a lot of leashes in my house, and one of them has Sally's name.
Well, I have to share this. This is so funny. I've been wanting to put it on social media so many times because I laughed. I screenshotted it. And Anne is great about checking in with her athletes, and she checks in all the time. So I had sent her a picture of Isaiah. I got him this book for his birthday.
That's your son.
My son, Isaiah. Right. He just turned 8. But he has such a hard time going to bed at night. The boy bounces out of bed and bounces into bed. He is the happiest, most energized kid I know.
Hello. And,
duh. So what do you think? I got him this book that's called, what is it called? My parents think that I'm sleeping. But it's not. The kid's like under the sheet. He has a flashlight on. Like, or it says what I'm doing when my parents think I'm sleeping. So Anne writes me back. She's like, yeah, I'm going to write a book that says what I do when my coach thinks I'm resting. I was laughing so hard. Because when she first started coaching me, I did have a lot of those moments where it was like I was supposed to take it easy, but I would go and do an hour and a half in the gym on top of a 10-mile run. She's like, that's not a rest day, you know. So, but no, the relationship that we have is awesome, and I think that the most important thing out of all of it is just that it's so customized to me. She doesn't coach me the same way she does everybody on her roster, and she doesn't do that for anybody else. So.
Dan, how much of coaching is writing workout plans and then dealing or addressing other issues, whether it's nutrition or headspace or just telling them to knock it off and turn off the flashlight when you're underneath the bed?
That's a good question. It's like, you think of a coach as just writing a weekly program, but that's like a third of it, you know? And then there's, with the women, there's other stuff going on all the time. The guys talk to them like,
let's not beat around the bush here.
Once or twice a week, but the women, it's like it's almost every day, you know, emails and all that. But there's also the, especially with these long runs, racing strategies and tapering and all this other stuff, you know, like that anyway.
So many other things and just building confidence and teaching to listen to your body, like Ann is saying, right?
Yeah.
Have you had a coach before?
Oh yeah. And I would completely agree. I can coach people, but I can't coach myself. I need to have a coach. And I really appreciate being able to be coached. You need someone who's objective. And I feel like I do know that there are some successful athletes that coach themselves, but I think they're a rarity. It's just very helpful to have someone looking in from the outside, just to be the rational voice, to not have those insecurities that we all have. That, you know, I think a big reason why athletes don't rest is because they're afraid. They're afraid other people are out training. I need to train. So that's one thing that the coach can do is, you know, hold the athlete back and teach them the importance of recovery and rest and so forth. And as Dan said, it's the writing the plan is a tiny, tiny part of it. There's just so much when it comes to a successful athlete. I mean, maybe for someone who, you know, if the person's a very inexperienced athlete and they just need to know how many miles do I need to run to be able to finish an event, that is one thing. But even that kind of person needs so much more as far as nutrition and, as you say, headspace and things like that. All of those things and having someone who understands, as Sally was saying, how Anne understands her, having someone like that, that's
That is the beauty of coaching, and that's what we get out of coaching.
Have you ever fired an athlete? And that's going to go to all coaches at this table, and there are four of them. Have you ever fired an athlete?
Yes.
How'd that go?
Well, it's very hard. It's very hard. It's a funny thing. I think the thing that I found that surprised me when I first started coaching was that there, you know, because there's the paid side of it, and coaching does not pay the bills. So I found that there were athletes that were willing to pay me more, like that I would, let's say, make more money from. But the one that I fired, that's who I fired. I was probably making the most from him. He was willing to pay me. It was more like he was willing to pay me. That made him feel better. But he would always come with all of these excuses why he didn't do this and didn't do that and didn't do this. And then there were other athletes that were so dedicated, and so we were together on the same page, and we were working together toward a goal that were, let's say, younger college students couldn't pay the bills. I would much prefer coaching someone like that because they were very invested in it, where someone else, in this example that I have, that person wanted to pay me but not do the work and not be invested in the goal. And so that's why it was a relationship that wasn't going to work out.
So maybe it wouldn't be nice for me to ask if the other coaches have fired someone. We'll just assume that maybe somebody, there's better fits in different places, and it's good to help people move along to find a coach that better fits their personality. But if I said that somebody was an energy vampire, would that make any sense to anybody here?
Oh, yeah.
Energy vampires, right?
Well, Dan brought it up earlier, too. I mean, honestly, you can go online and download 101 different training plans.
Exactly.
And there are a lot of them. And they're really good.
Really good.
That's right.
But it really does come down to the individual and helping the individual understand how to train best for them. But it's really hard when you get an athlete that is like an insane research junkie and they care more about that and matching it up with what you're telling them than about getting to know themselves.
Right.
And so, you know, I've had athletes in the past where they will rip themselves apart every single tiny detail of every single training run. And then, you know, send me these 4-page emails about, you know, I probably shouldn't have run at this heart rate on the downhill. And I probably should have taken the gel in at 40 minutes instead of 35 minutes. And I, you know, this time I did 5 salt tabs for the run, but I probably should have done 6. And it's just constantly. And then you get to race day and it's like, oh my gosh, this person's going to explode if everything doesn't like match up according to their plan and their Excel sheet, you know? So I know a lot of what we do is helping an athlete believe in themselves and helping them get to know themselves and realize that just like anything in life, like there's a specific path for them for success. And if you get caught up in, you know, these generic, you know, plans that have been made for no one specific on the internet, or you get caught up in what, you know, your competitors are doing, it's going to destroy you. And it's unfortunate. You see that a lot. But I think of all the conversations and even our, you know, the time vampires, I think is what you said.
No, energy vampires.
Yeah. Time and energy. I think we know that going in. Mm-hmm. We know going in that when you put your whole heart into somebody, because you really do, like Anna was saying, their goals become your goals. It's exhausting, especially you have a whole entire roster and you're thinking about, oh my gosh, is Janet's knee okay? And I know that John is racing this weekend. And I know that, you know, Sarah had some really nutrition issues and she's got a race in 3 weeks. And we really got to nail that down. And you start to get so involved. And so I think we're always mentally exhausted on that end, but it's good. And you start to look at your roster as a family. You know, like you have like the five that are just like insane. Like you get an email and a text from them every few hours, every single day. And then you have the ones that are like, well, I haven't heard from them in like 2 weeks, but they're doing everything I asked.
And you get embarrassed because they're the ones you're like, I'll check in and say, how's it going? And they're like, hey, because I have them like write in every day, but sometimes it's just like, I want to hear from them. And they're like, aren't you reading? I said, I am following what you're doing. I just want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And then they're like almost insulted. And I'm like, yay. Well, like.
So it's coaching comes down to learning how to work with every type of personality. Mm-hmm. If you're a great communicator, you got to be able to communicate with everyone and get on their level and see them right where they are. It isn't just, all right, this is what we're all doing. We're all going to do the same roster, and this is the plan that worked for me. I'm going to give it to you. And I think that's pretty much what's
it's a joy also, like seeing Dan come today. It was like, oh, Andy, I'm sorry, but did like this at the 25 at AR. And he was like so happy. And I was like, that made my day. That's the one thing. I had a lot of things going on today. But when Dan said that, I was like, wow, this is like, it's a give back. It's like, and yeah. I know Andy's the nicest guy too, but it was like, Dan was really thinking about it. It was like on top. It was like the first thing I think he was thinking when he saw me. It wasn't like your house is a mess, your kitchen floor has been torn up, like your dogs are crazy. It's like, Andy did really well. Yay. And I was like, this is awesome. I was really happy. Yeah.
I would like to talk a little bit about the nutrition, what's changed. But before that, before that, I would like just to throw the question up, and whoever can grab it and speak instead of me pointing at somebody. But what has trail running given back to you? What has it taught you? What has that experience out on the trail? How has that enhanced or improved your personality or your life or anything? Because there's a lot to trail running. You get to learn who you are. You get to match yourself up against some things that are improbable, seemingly impossible, but you overcome them. And you get to learn who you are and how much you have. And when you think you're at the end, there's a bit more. And those are some of the things that I've taken from the trail. And any agree with that or other things that you have helped enhance who you are, your own personality or your life or others? Anybody interested in that?
I've always really enjoyed being outside, outdoors. Yeah. So I love backpacking, but you can't backpack all year round. In California, it snows in the winter. Right. So, but trail running, you can do all year round. So that's one reason I like getting out there, and just you can get in the trails, and if there's a huge rainstorm, it's okay.
A little muddy.
Yeah, exactly. And you go home and take a shower and wash all the mud down the drain.
Yeah. Anybody else? Anybody?
I'm kind of curious with Anne, because she just moved to Auburn. It's kind of cool.
It is, and that's I'm trying to think how has trail running changed my life, but what's sticking in my mind is exactly what Anne was just saying. I was thinking about moving here to Auburn, and we're living right here close to Anne at Roby Point, so right on the Western States Trail, and every single morning now I go out and running, and I'm just in awe. It's so beautiful, and I just cannot believe that we're living here. It's just amazing. My husband and I have moved around a lot since we've been married over 20 years. We've lived in different countries. We've lived in a lot of different places, a lot of great places. Now, we've just moved here to Auburn, and I am, like I said, I'm just in awe. And I tell people, I feel like I've just been on vacation since I got here. Mm-hmm. It's really, really beautiful, and there's just nothing that can match it. You go into the canyon, and you see the river, and you see the trees and the sky, and it's and whether it's a rainy day or a sunny day, it's there's always something beautiful about it.
It is a disconnect from the daily activities, the daily grind. There's something about three steps off the pavement onto the trail that everything goes away. Whether it was a bill that needs to be paid or, you know, something that needs to be done, a floor that is getting remodeled or a kitchen, as in Anne's case here, that all of a sudden, somehow that stuff disappears. Magically, it's gone. And I think that's a wonderful place to be. And I think some people are looking for that. And maybe they find it,
quilting. Remember when we talked about quilting?
Maybe some people quilt. Maybe some people go and see if they can drink a six-pack. I mean, we have to disconnect somehow. There needs to be a way to disconnect. And I think the trail brings that magical moment, and it happens quick without a hangover, which is kind of nice. How about you, Sally?
I think since I started trail running, because I my first run was, my first race was American River 50.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had not, 2010. And I really? Had not I didn't
know
really.
I should know that. Yay, fire me.
I was actually
okay, mine was
terrified.
1985. Yay.
I was terrified to run on trails. So I hadn't really run on trails when I did that race. I did pretty much all road to train for it. Mm-hmm. So what I really appreciated was I had so much fun. I wanted to do more of it. But trail running actually helped me overcome a lot of my fears, because I knew if I'm going to get good at this, I need to, you know, I love race specific, like Dan was saying, I love to practice, you know, train just for a race. So it's made me try and overcome a lot of my fears, but it's also because there's been times in my running where I've gotten injured and I haven't been able to do it for long stretches of time, so that when I go back, it makes me so much more appreciative of it, because my time out on the trails, it is really precious. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of beauty, and it is a great time to just let your mind release and relax, and you have quiet and you get to hear your breath and the sound of your feet hitting the dirt, and just, you know, being out in the high country all alone. I mean, I love that. Those things get me excited. But I am very aware that there may come a day where I won't get to race. I won't get to be out in the mountains for hours and hours. So what it has taught me is just a lot about myself. So, you know, Sally, if you don't have this anymore, like, who are you? You know, like, what else in my life, you know, fulfills me and makes, you know, gives me meaning and purpose. And I think especially in the ultra running community, it's easy to meet people that is all their purpose is, you know, is just ultra running. It's training every single week, and it's, you know, putting in 150 miles a week, and then they get injured, and it's like massive depression, and, you know, they're upset and irritable. And I totally identify with all of that. Like, I get that. But I think that the more that I do it, the more that I become so grateful that I get to, and that's how I approach it. It's like, I get to do this. And this is a season in my life where I'm really strong, and I'm fast, and I get to compete, and I get to do it all over the world. Mm-hmm. And I savor that. I savor every single race I get to do. I savor every single run, so that I can look back and know that I did it fully. And so it's taught me, one, to appreciate the season of my life, but it's also taught me to make sure that I keep balance in my life too, that there is more to who I am and to what my life is about, so that when the day comes that I'm not racing and traveling the world and out on the trails every single day, that I still have great purpose and meaning. And so I appreciate trail running for both those things.
Well, trail running has seasons. It has its racing season, right? And then
now it seems like year round is racing season.
Well, track with me here, McCray. All right?
No, but I know.
But through life, it doesn't always have to be, you know, competitive going for the podium.
Yes.
That it can morph into just, you know, going
it's
out there.
It can be a lifestyle.
Right.
It really can. Right. I mean, I'm someone, I'm like totally injured and blah, 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 but I can go out and still walk with my dogs, and I have to. I mean, there's a place, it's only like probably a quarter mile that it's a trail, and I go there, and sometimes it'll take me half an hour, sorry, because I'm just like, I need the space. And I just need that. And that reminds me, the first year I ran AR, and I hadn't done a lot of trail running. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just remember hitting the trail, because you'd run like 26 miles of awful pavement, and then you'd hit, like, you get to Granite Bay, and your legs are all wobbly. And there was, like, field of poppies.
Yeah.
And all I can remember was, and it was hotter than the Dickens, and I just remember, really? We get to run through poppies? And, like, it's so much better. And I just, like, if the first 26 miles were totally boring, I kept telling myself, I'll never do this again. Ever, as long as I live, blah, blah, blah. Forgive me, body, this awful. And then I hit the field of poppies, and I'm like, wow. It was incredible. I had never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, you know, everyone, maybe not, but you, like, go, and it just, like, opened up, and there are lupins, and yay, and it's like single track, and then there were like boulders, and I'm like, this is kind of fun.
A kid again, like Sally said earlier.
No, I always felt like you do. I think that's like the best running is when you just like become a kid again. Mm-hmm. I do. So
yeah.
I don't know. That's my story. I don't know what yours is, Don.
Did everybody get to pitch in and talk about that piece of it before we talk a little bit about
it?
Yeah, about some nutrition. Some now, today, and 1983 versus 2016. Much of a change?
So Snickers bars or Paydays.
Oh, remember that. What did though?
ERG.
ERG. That was awful.
Let's talk.
That was poisonous.
Dr. Gookin.
Oh, it was like sweat. Yeah, remember? Remember? So I had just done water, and so I was drinking. I was gagging on the stuff. And that's all they had. There was water and this other, like, poison. And I'm like, he's like running with this person. I said, what is this? It says, like, sweat. And he's like, that's what you're drinking. That's what you need. And I was like, that was before I hit the poppies. I was like, oh, man, this just, that stuff was, they don't sell that anymore. It was sweat. It did, wasn't it? Didn't you like it too? You're like, this is good. You did.
That and Coke.
Oh, Coke. Now Coke is now, good.
The best one was ERG and Coke mixed together.
A good mix, huh?
Oh, yeah, that was good. No, really?
Absolutely.
Oh. No, nutrition really has come a long way because it was like M&M's, Snickers, Paydays, like a few potato chips. I mean, really, I mean, like gels, goo. I mean, it's more dialed in. It's faster. You can get it down without gagging. It's not like you carry an M&M for like a half an hour. Do you know how many times I've like, you know, oh, I was just talking to my client. So she's like, I couldn't do the gel, so I got this quarter peanut butter jelly sandwich, and it took me like an hour to eat it. And I'm like, well, at least you're nibbling on it. You know, it's like, and you look at it, and you look at like peanut butter and jelly sandwich, like quarter, and it's like monstrous. It's like the whole universe. And you're like, okay, I know I have to eat this. But yeah, now you can, it's hard. You can like down a goo, but it's so, and it's good for you. I mean, it's like good. It's not like hit or miss. I always thought like getting in there like, I'm sorry, it's probably good for you, but oh my God, that was awful tasting.
Has peanut butter and jelly been a standard fare always out there since you can remember?
Yeah, it's good food. Yeah. So are Paydays.
Yeah. Do you like Paydays? Salt and sugar, and they don't melt.
And they don't melt. Now Snickers, yes, the Snickers, yep, on the bike. Oh, yay. Snickers are good in the winter, like those.
That's right.
Yep, sorry. No, you know, oh my God, it is so true. You like going in the back.
I bought into the Paydays.
Oh, she did.
I tried a couple of Paydays and I was like, I felt so guilty training. I'm like, I'm eating candy bars on this training run. I cannot do this.
Oh my God, I was known as Bill Finkbeiner. He'd be like, Anne's the, like, she just eats the chunkiest stuff. And I'm like, even when Power Bars came in, I like did all the ingredients and I'm like, it's no difference. Yay. But, you know, it's probably a little bit different. But, oh, they taste so much better. Sorry. Do you think? Oh, well, no, the original Power Bars at Leadville. Oh, my God. You're
and
like,
you know those are coming back. You can get those again in the store. The
oh,
original.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
See, everything's coming back.
Yeah.
You know, like the, Power Bars, like the original, like those, like, brick, bright, you know?
Yeah, I remember those.
They're coming back.
You know where you see them? This is crazy. Like, driving is so hard. I think driving's really hard. And, like, you're going down I-5, and they're, like, Power Bars. And you're like, yeah, I'll have it, because it's better than, like, what else? What are you going to have? Like, Carl's Jr.? Sorry, I'll have it. You know?
Yeah, but right.
They are. Oh, In and Out. Total barforama. Sorry.
And doesn't eat.
I don't eat.
Have you always been a vegetarian?
Pretty much. I did a little break for a while, but it's philosophical.
Yeah. Well, I can understand. I mean, it's not a hard stretch.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I like get the meat, and I'm like, oh my God, and then I start like crying, and you don't want to like, maybe it tenderizes your meat or something, but I can't. I'm not kidding.
It's salty. That's why you don't like it. It has tears in it.
I'll put some
herb. It probably tastes a lot like
herb. You can't eat grilled cheese in and out.
You can. No, I have. No.
My sister used to get them all the time when we were in high school.
Yeah, no, you can. I've gotten that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I-5's gotten better. Now you have, like, Starbucks.
There's Starbucks. Yeah.
Yeah, some things have gotten better in life. There's, like, real coffee on I-5.
How about you, Dan? Food at the aid stations. Any thoughts on that? Number of calories consumed? Did you run instinctively back to, and that everything comes back to listening to your body?
Especially when you talk about the counting your the calories and so forth. And this is an example, and Dan sort of talked about in training, you do certain things, but then you never actually run 100 miles in training.
Yeah.
And so in training, for example, you know that you can take whatever, 200, 300 calories per hour, and you're able to digest that. But in a race where it's longer and you've got all of the nerves and different things going on, mm-hmm. your body's not able to process the same number of calories per hour. Right. So then again, if you've got your little list that you've made out and you say, I'm going to take this many gels and I'm going to do this many calories and this much salt per hour, and you're going strictly by that and not listening to your body, what I see is mostly people take in too much food and then they end up sick. So yes, for sure. It's again, you do need to have your plan, because you do need to practice with these foods that you're going to be eating, train with them, but then you need to kind of put the plan aside and listen to your body and do what the body needs. Oh, maybe I could say problem solve during the race.
Real time problem solving. Yeah, that's we're going to coin that phrase. That's and owns it, of course. So
there's one question.
Please,
that,
Dan.
There's one question that most humans never ask themselves and don't really need to, but that ultra runners do need to ask themselves, and that is, can you run and digest at the same time?
Right. It's like, can you?
I mean, really? That's like at 80 miles. Can you digest? And
what is happening at 80 compared to 20?
Yeah, it's different. You've got all everything lined up, all your drinks or whatever and food, and then at 80 miles, your body says, no way.
And that's why hard candies are like a savior.
There's been a couple, to my last couple Western States, the last 30 miles, I existed on soda crackers and Coke. It's like, are you kidding? But that was the only thing that would stay down.
Yeah, Coke has helped people finish a lot of runs. I know Tim Tweetmeyer, who's run with... Many, 25, yeah, all under 24-hour times, right? That I hear he existed quite a bit at the end on Coke and M&Ms. That was his, that's what powered him through the end.
Right. To me, it was seriously Coke and hard candies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to find your best hard candy, though.
Which is
it butterscotch or peppermint? You know, I'd always have a bunch. But sucking on two hard candies and just sipping on Coke, man, that's like rocket fuel.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really, it's probably, it's rocket, did he really?
Yeah.
But the dentists don't like it.
Well, and I suggest Tootsie Pops.
Love Tootsie Pops.
Yeah. Then you've got the sticks. So that it doesn't have to stay in your mouth. You can pull it out.
Now that's an idea. That and Cinderbox. We're learning something.
I was speaking to Dana Gard, and that's a name that you guys know, certainly from around here, and an awesome runner. And he was talking to me about, always didn't have these ultra direction soft tops, as we look across there, the red top, the nipple on the top, that you guys were carrying around mustard containers and syrup. Any truth to this? Not that I doubt Dana Gard, but let's talk about that.
The tops used to be much smaller, very tiny.
Well, I remember those ultra.
Right. And you could bite them with your...
And pop them out, yeah. I expected a tooth to come out on occasion.
Yeah.
I like those.
Right. And then they became illegal because, some kid swallowed one once or something like that.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah, so they had to make them larger.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, did you guys really use mustard containers? And
I never did.
You never used that?
No.
You didn't use that?
No, the only thing that really I didn't have, which I was really glad because Carol Huota lives on the run, is you're trying to run just with a bike bottle without any kind of strap. Mm. And your arm, I mean, it's great for 20-miler, but when I did AR and I didn't know to carry a bottle, someone gave it to me, your hand, just the gripping is exhausting.
Mm. It takes energy,
right? It does. It did take energy.
Yeah.
So then I was using duct tape.
To strap it to your wrist.
You do, yeah. Or you'd make your own rest. And then Carol Hewitt's sweetest thing, and then she made her own. So if you got to go know Carol at Michigan Bluff, she'd give you her own things, and then Ultimate, and then... But that was a pain. Those water bottles, people don't know. Then I went home, and I was like, I'm going to be really smart. And I got out some duct tape, and I made it all, but it got sweaty and gross, and yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, what did you... Did you just ram with a water bottle? Did you remember...
I think that Mark Packworks.
Oh, Mark was great.
Had some styrofoam hand grips.
Oh, those were nice. And he had insulated stuff.
Yes.
But did he have them way back in the 80s? In the early 80s? 83?
No, maybe late 80s.
Yeah, he was from Berkeley. He was innovative.
Right.
Yeah, I'd like go to a shop and I'd be like, hey.
Yeah. You know, it's fun to listen to Origin, a lot of these things that we take for granted, that we walk into our local running store, cruise on the internet, and we have all these selections in color and style and number of ounces. And you guys were innovative and knew the people at the which aid station or lived in which area or who was innovative in which place and collectively put your heads together and started creating this stuff. So it's kind of neat to listen to where it all came from and where it started. So it's been a pleasure to get to talk about this. Does anybody else have anything in closing? I like the topic, and I probably could speak until the next race starts.
I don't know. You're not exhausted. Don, let's all applaud Don. I mean, he like announced AR, and he did a training run. How far did you run today, Don?
16. I just 16.
16. No, and then no, he like announced. I shortened it up. Announcing is difficult. Yeah, only 16, right.
You know what I love about announcing is that everybody that's coming through, you get a moment just to plug right into them and enjoy their finish. Because if you've run the race, you know what it takes to do it. And so you watch the people come around the corner, and you know they've been working all day, and they've been imagining this finish line. And if we can just get into that moment and focus on that runner, it doesn't take any energy at all because it brings you energy, and you just get to celebrate with every runner coming through. I'm getting chills talking about it because I love the finish experience.
So that's why one of the things I like about putting on a race. Yeah, because you can go and just like giving everyone either a hug or a high five or giving them their awards, you forget nothing, and you see them coming across. It's like the best joy.
Yeah, you the know? Smiles are they're so big.
Yeah, or real. Not, but once they sit down, you get them a little Coke, you know, whatever. Maybe a payday, a hamburger. You know? But I love just, and I remember Norm Klein was the one who reminded me of that because he was the old race director for Western States, and he'd finish, and he stayed up there for every single runner, and then he had the medal with the thing, and you'd think he'd be decapitated. I remember putting on me, but there's a joy to be there at the finish line. And yeah. If you can't do it announcing or being
there's a number of places to serve at, you know, along the race to participate in the joy and to get if you're looking for energy to get and some passion and you just can't find it and you want to sign up for a race, go serve at a race, go volunteer, and it will come to you, no doubt about it. There was a runner that came in today. So it was American River 50 and American River, the first inaugural 25, right? So there was a 25-mile edition today. And the fastest runner came in 6 hours or whatever for the 50. But we had a 25-mile finisher come in at 12:30-something. So think about that. A 50-miler coming in 6 hours and some change. And then the 25-miler coming in at 12:30 or so. But the crowd and the people were more interested in that 25-hour finisher, and the applause and the cheering was for that runner. And if that doesn't move you, if that doesn't get you excited about the sport, then you've got to find something else like croquet or something. But I got to tell you, that was an awesome moment as she came through that finish line, and it was just can't be replaced unless you watch it. So I love the sport. And yes. I'm glad we get to talk about it. And it's never going to get old. I know it. You know, and there are different seasons, Sally, like you said.
I love that. I'm going to use it. Can I use that? Oh, she says I can use it. Yay. I think that is so true. That and the cinder blocks.
Sally's in race season right now and competition season. And we support you for it. We're excited about it. And you take it very seriously, and you get the right rest, and you listen to your coach. And if you need a coach out there, Dan Williams is available. He'll bring his 21 Western States, 10 American River 50, and countless other races and training runs that he and Ann put together and trained one another, literally, as the sport has developed. They're available. Ann, you're doing some coaching, too. Tell me about your coaching.
Well, I coach a lot of triathletes, Ironman in particular, and also some marathon runners, a lot of running, and 100-mile bike riders.
So if they want to get a hold of you or in touch with you, how would they do that?
CoachAnnT@gmail.com. So it's A-N-N-E T at gmail.com.
Good. Dan Williams, how do we get a hold of you? And we'll link it to the show notes. So I'll get that from you. So if you go on to trailrunnernation.com and look at the podcast in the show notes, we'll have a link to all of these places. But for those that might be out on a long run and have a great memory, Where would they find you, Dan?
Well, most of my, I get most of Ann's overflow.
Okay.
Oh, that's not true.
She's obviously just very booked. But my email address is like on her website.
So
kind of down at the bottom.
So you're part of Ann's coaching team. So as you guys work and collaborate mm-hmm. together, find the right fits and who needs what, and you like you ran together, you coach together, and that friendship has not been severed. So to get you is to get Ann, and to get Ann is to get you, and I like the way that sounds. So we can find that at the Ann at your link, at your website, AnnTrayson.com.
I think it's what is
it? Is that Ann Trayson coaching?
And I think it's Ann Trayson. Or you know what? Ann Trayson at Gmail.
If you just Google her name, it'll come up.
Thank you.
Just write Ann Trayson in Google. That and about a million other
yeah, once you get
articles.
Past all of those
all
Western
states
winnings and the AR-50
she's
winnings.
She's Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes. And if you look, go to Ultra Sign Up. And you're not going to want to hear it. So you just kind of take your earphones out. But if you go to ultrasignup.com and you put in Ann Trayson as an athlete, just to make sure that you're sitting down and holding on to something, because her accomplishments are just amazing. Right, Sally?
Parallel.
True? Yeah. Sally, where do we find you?
SallyMcRae.com.
You got to get up to the mic, Sally. This isn't your
first
podcast.
SallyMcRae.com.
So, yeah, she did. Snapchat, she ran. Instagram, her Twitter, tempo was Facebook. A little so hard today, she can't even sit up. Yay.
Ann gave me a hard workout.
Yes, well, she's your coach, and I'm glad you listened to her. Now go out and run.
Mas.
Hey, thanks, guys.
You can just delete, right? Because it's at the end.
No, yeah, we can always delete. So just as we're talking, we just shut the podcast down, and Ann T.
Well, I was going to include my little story about how to learn how to run downhill faster.
Well, for those of us that want to learn how to run downhill faster.
Well, so I have a new dog, Remy. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so Remy's just under a year old, rescue, and a pointer. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to do with Remy is run him a lot. Mm-hmm. And so... And here on the Western States Trail, it's all up and down. And so I run with Remy with a waistband. You know, it's hands-free, so he's around my waist. And he pulls straight down that hill. Oh. And I have no choice but to keep up. So I just turn my legs over as quick as I can, and I jump from rock to rock to rock because he's flying downhill. So if that doesn't make me faster downhill, I don't know what will.
Fearless running, right?
There you go. No, I am full of fear, but I'm going for it.
All right. That's good. We'll keep that in there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ann.